Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th of September, Anno Domini 2009, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, a few things to lose, and of course you'll be able to choose when we get to the poll. And let's talk about that in a minute after I remind you that you are listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Please feel free to give us a call. Our number in the 585 area code is 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, if you're outside the 585 area code, give us a call toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Our poll comes from a story in the news today. Google's Gmail service is back up after experiencing disruptions for about 2.5 hours on Thursday. The entire email service crashed Thursday morning and then came back up an hour or so later. Contact lists were still unavailable for many users. Google initially reported that only a, quote, small subset, unquote, of users were affected by the outage, but it later confirmed in an email that a majority of its users were affected. A Google spokes individual also noted that the extent of slowness and service degradation varied from user to user. Frustrated Gmail users took to Twitter to voice their frustration and look for more information. They were flying all over the place, mostly in Twitter speak. I'm not even going to try.
And the overwhelming increase in Twitter traffic caused Twitter to fail.
Yeah, right.
And on it goes.
The Gmail problem comes on the heels of an hour-and-a-half Google News glitch on Tuesday. Google did not reveal the cause of that crash or how engineers got the news aggregation site working again. And earlier this month, Google experienced one day of intermittent disruptions, followed by a second day during which users saw multiple delays and outages. Gmail users also endured well-publicized crashes in both February and May. So, the poll question is, this week's Gmail outage left me feeling horribly empty, worried me, didn't bother me at all, and I don't use Gmail. And you can vote in the poll by going to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. So far, we've got 49 people who have voted in the poll. Most of them don't use Gmail, actually. So then I guess you have a choice between didn't bother me at all and I don't use Gmail. But the whole idea is that the other three are about actually using Gmail. And if you use your brain, you'll figure that out. But when you're done with the poll, of course, that's not enough for you folks. I know you folks, you want to say more. So if you look at the little yellow box underneath the poll and click on give us your opinion, it will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
You're just bell crazy today.
Yes, I like that bell.
Yeah, you do like that bell. Where you can leave an opinion. The opinion question, of course, is does this latest Gmail outage worry you at all? So far, we've got a half a dozen answers on there, and you can join them there. While you're there, take a look at my website and at asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Oh, you're good. You're good. And check it out. I do a whole thing. I send out a newsletter, questions and answers, tips and tricks, rants and raves, website information, all kinds of interesting stuff. At least I think it's interesting, and I hope you will too. And at $15 a year, it's a heck of a bargain.
It's a steal.
It's a steal, doggone it. All right, we're going to go right to the phones, and our first caller is Carl. Carl, where are you calling from?
Calling from Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir.
That's not Pottsville, PA.
No, but it's close.
It's close. Pottsville, PA, of course, is where you get Yingling. So for you guys, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump.
Where are you near?
Not too far from Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And not too far from Reading.
There you go. Yeah, that one I know.
Yep.
There's a big river that Google Maps isn't naming yet.
No, I've gone through a lot of those towns on my way down to York, Pennsylvania.
All right, what's your question?
Of course. And my question is this. If somebody has a computer and they don't have backup disks for the operating system, is it possible to use a file backup service like Carbonite to back up the entire operating system so that you don't need the disks?
Here's the thing.
Short answer, no.
No. Do you have the key code on it?
No.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's the big one.
Well, it's not really. This is just a general question. I do have the backup disks for my computer, but it's just something I was thinking of, so I was just curious.
Well, here's the problem as it stands, Carl, which is, by the way, is it Carl with a K or a C?
With a C.
Ah, there you go. When you back up your system, and you do actually manage to back up everything, which is very hard to do because Windows won't back up files that are open, which is most of the operating system. But let's set that aside. Even if you manage to back up everything, if the reason you keep backing up is because something might screw up and then something does screw up and you restore, let's say it's a virus. How do you know that virus isn't already in your backup?
Good point.
Right. And if the thing that's screwed up is something in the registry, the likelihood that that thing is already in the registry and just hasn't been tripped yet is very high. So when you do backups, my suggestion is always to make sure that your backups are clean, but your files are clean by dancing the security tango, and then back up your data. Because that's what's important to you. You can always reload your operating system and reload any software that you legitimately have disks for, but you can't bring back your data all that easily, so that's the thing you want to back up.
Yeah, there's sort of a choice between a fast backup or a fast restore. People who back up everything on their computer, when something goes wrong, you can just restore the whole computer in one shot. That takes more backup space. So if you just back up your data and there's a catastrophic failure, then you reload Windows, you reload your operating system, you know, same holds true for the Mac, then you reload your apps, and then you restore your data.
Well, see, that was one of the big things in the forums folks were going back and forth with, because I clearly stated I won't, and I still won't to this day, that if somebody brings me in their computer and they've got a handwritten CD copy of, say, Windows XP with the license code on it, I'm not installing it. Because every version of XP that came out always came with a key code.
Right.
That is to be plastered on the side or the back or the underside of a computer. When it's
earlier,
a laptop, it's usually underneath. On the PCs, desktops, it's usually on the side or the back.
And on
that
earlier
key code you have to have.
On earlier systems, they left it on the disk envelope sleeve that people would lose. Yeah, they'd lose that all the time.
Once it started with Windows 8 second edition, they started coming out with the little key code that you pulled off, because like you say, that's what folks were doing it, because they wanted to put it in their own little jewel case, and they forgot to keep the key code.
Right. Well, at any rate, Carl, really, your best bet is to, and really you want to reinstall Windows every once in a while anyway, but seriously, your best bet is to make sure that all of your data are backed up, and before you do that, make sure they're clean, and then make sure you keep all your original CDs, so if you need to reinstall Windows or Office or, you know, Adobe or whatever, that you can, you have those handy and you can do it. Okay?
Great. Thanks for the advice. And by the way, I just wanted to say you have the best computer show in the world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Carl. All the way from Pottstown, PA. Yeah.
But he does make an interesting point that it is also good to have an off-site backup through one of the backup services, or just make a second copy of your disks or second hard drive to take it off-site. Because if you have, you know, a fire or flood, whatever, in your house, you lose your computer and the backup drive sitting next to it.
Right. That's exactly right. That's why I always back up to my server at work, which gets backed up to tape, which is taken off site.
Yeah, I've been a little backed up lately, too.
Yeah, I've heard. Never mind. We don't care. Our next.
Oh, you're talking about.
Yeah. So we're going on to the next caller now. Our next caller is Ron. Where are you calling from, Ron?
Yeah, Ron. Hi, Rochester.
Rochester, New York.
Right.
Hub of civilization in the Western world. What can we do for you?
Okay. Well, I'm running Thunderbird, and I'm running Windows XP Home. Now, before I was able to email any folder from the desktop with pictures or text on it or anything or anywhere, I downloaded a program from Frontier for virus checking and spam and everything, and the file system was so big that it kind of corrupted my Windows, and I wasn't able to load the Windows. I since deleted that, and I still can't send any email through my Thunderbird, you know, any icons that are on the desktop that have pictures or anything like that. And I'm wondering, since Mozilla is running Thunderbird, do I have to download Mozilla Firefox in order to maintain the full access to Thunderbird?
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't have to. Are you saying that what you can't do any longer is right click on an icon and there's a send to?
Right.
Menu?
If I have an icon on the desktop that has pictures on it, I was able to send it through the email. Okay.
Right.
And now I can't do it.
All right.
I can't even open a link that someone sends me a link through the email. I can't open any links.
Okay, so that's a separate issue. You know what? Okay, here's what I want you to do. Right-click on your taskbar, which is the bar across the bottom there.
Okay.
Select properties. Select. Just write this down. Don't do it now. Select the Start Menu tab.
Okay.
Click the Customize button. I'm assuming your window, you're using XP, right?
Right.
And then you have choices for email. And I think it's just called web browser, and or internet it might be called. But make sure that one of those says that the email one says Thunderbird, and that your internet browser says whatever your internet browser is, Firefox or
Internet Explorer.
It may well be that whatever you downloaded tried to change those things, and when it got corrupted, it screwed those things up. But generally speaking, that's kind of what you need.
Okay, because they say the file system that I downloaded was so big, it would not allow Windows to open or anything. It just maintained it right in the logo, you know, kept loading, trying to.
Right.
So
well, that's it.
Ever since then, you know, my email has not been operating correctly.
Right. I'm a little confused as to how that could be that big. But okay, whatever. That's all right. Yeah, give that a try. Let us know.
Okay, now Mozilla has nothing to do with Thunderbird then, or does not own Thunderbird?
Well, no. The Mozilla Corporation puts out both Thunderbird and Firefox. Thunderbird being the email program, Firefox being the web browser. But you can use Thunderbird with Internet Explorer just fine, and you can use Firefox with Outlook Express just fine. We tell people not to use the two Microsoft programs, Outlook Express or Internet Explorer, or
okay,
even Outlook itself, simply because they're such hugely large targets for the bad guys,
okay,
out there, the malware writers. But either one will work with either one, if that made sense.
Okay.
Okie doke.
I'll try that. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
Bye.
We see that. I'm very confused as to what he could have downloaded that it was so big it corrupted his operating system.
Yeah,
I think it was just a bad download.
Right. Maybe it was missing an EOF and just kept downloading until his drive was full.
Or maybe he was trying to do the Service Pack 3.
Yeah, that could have.
No, he said he downloaded it from Frontier. Some sort of file from Frontier. But
it's likely
that it was either corrupted or whatever.
Yeah.
So
he may have meant using Frontier Internet Service, not from Frontier Corporation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, what would other than their security?
Well, most of the ISPs have the security software you can get as part of your subscription.
That could have been it, you know, and then it hiccuped.
Hiccup during the download or even during the install, since security programs tend to bury themselves pretty deep inside of Windows.
Yeah, I had another one that was running. They were wondering why the machine was running slow. They had two antivirus programs on it, the CA and the Norton.
Well, Norton alone.
Yep. You want to talk about major crawl.
Well, Norton antivirus, not a bad program, but the Norton suite, where it adds about 50 programs into your system and they all try to access everything all at once.
It does make you safe because you can't do anything.
Yes, you are completely safe. That's a problem. I am not a fan of Norton suite.
Yes.
I am not a fan of that at all.
And we've also seen reports that virus writers know about Norton and McAfee, the big antivirus companies.
Right.
They don't release a virus until it gets past these suites.
Right, and so that's why I tend to use one of the lesser-known ones, like Avast.
We forgot completely about Talk Like a Pirate Day because it was overshadowed by my birthday.
That's exactly right. If you have to make a choice between Talk Like a Pirate Day and your birthday, then we absolutely picked the right one.
Aye, matey.
Nah, we really picked the right one. Last Saturday was Steve's birthday. Sunday was Dave's birthday. Dave is an entire year older than he was last week's show, but
still getting around the board too.
Yeah, unbelievable. It is unbelievable how he manages to, you know, stay focused and awake for this entire hour.
He is the grayest of us all.
He is that. He is that, but not by much. I'm catching up to him pretty quick.
One thing though, I've seen before we go to break here, there's matter of fact, I'm going to talk about it when we come back out of it. There is one really nasty Trojan that's out there that's catching a lot of folks, and you're going to want to stay tuned so you can hear about that when we come back from commercial there in just a few seconds, because it's been annoying.
Worse than the antivirus 2008?
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, there's your little teaser. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, hurtling headlong into our next 20 years. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound Bites, celebrating 20 years.
Would it be crazy if you packed your bags and left for a week, a month, a year? What if you left for 2 years? What if you were going far away to help in a village on the edge of the Gobi Desert? To spend time with people the rest of the world only reads about? To teach children and learn a thing or two about yourself? Would that be crazy? Peace Corps, life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Hi, I'm Linda Wildman. Please join me middays, 10 to noon on Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Lifetime Assistance, presenting jazz saxophonist and three-time Grammy winner Branford Marsalis, performing live at the new Eastman Theater on Sunday, October 18th at 7 p.m. This concert will celebrate Lifetime Assistance Foundation's annual Inspiration Award event. Tickets for the Branford Marsalis performance at the Eastman Theater are available through Ticketmaster at 232-1900, Ticketmaster.com, and all Ticketmaster outlets.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before, I did it.
You did what?
That one commercial you just heard Rob do was supposed to play in the rotation automatically. It didn't. And I was able to plug it right on in there.
You're good. He's learning the board.
I'm getting better at this. You know, compared... You know,
the first week, you looked like a deer in the headlights.
Man,
you look like a cross between a deer in the headlights and roadkill.
I think I was definitely the roadkill because I felt like I was dead meat, but we had a lot of fun, though. Well, anyways, going back to my teaser, there's a new one out, and this one is a nasty one, and it's called WinGuard Pro 2009.
Oh, great. Another one of these fake... antivirus programs.
This one just does not want to let go. We literally had to get it, you know, in this case, you just can't install the programs and try to update them. It won't let you get into the control panel.
Wow.
I mean, it disables everything. One workaround that I did find, in case anybody does get into this and is trying to get in and run some other programs, is... This one even catches if you try to go to, say, the run command and you go CMD, hit enter, you see a screen quick flash and stops. But
it traps your run command.
It craps your run command. But if you type in C-O-M-M-A-N-D, hit enter, it will open it up. And I had to run a couple other programs to get some of the, just to start. This took us over 5 hours.
Wow.
To clean out because I had to pull the hard drive out. Put it on the test bench just to get through some of the basic stuff because this thing was just infested. Then put it back in, and then I discovered the command prompt. I corrected that issue. I had to run a couple other programs. And then I was able to then get in after I got that done to do malware bites, which I had to do two times.
Wow.
Super anti-spyware three times. And then the AVG. And well, AVG was going off while I was trying to run the other two.
Of course it was.
And I just did that. But, yeah, close to 5 hours. Over 5 hours.
And what's your hourly rate? No.
Well, then, you know, that's, yeah, that's, you know, but this terrible. Gets me. And then some folks sit there and say, well, it shouldn't take that long.
Well, it shouldn't, but it does.
Right.
So I guess it should.
It would be lovely if it didn't, but
then,
it does.
And then it will come back next week with the same infection again.
Well, I like the ones that sit there and say, can I come and pick it up at 3? Sure. Won't be fully clean, but yeah, you can come and pick it up. I don't care.
Yeah.
You pay me for what I got done so far.
I'm amazed at people, you know, at people who don't understand that you're not sitting on a shelf somewhere waiting for them to come in. That you may, in fact, have a life and possibly even a job that you have to do before you get to their stuff.
They don't see the people in line ahead of them, so they think they're next.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, if you see a line, you know you're going to have to wait. But if you don't see... So we're thinking about getting cardboard cutouts. You're number 27 in line, and here's the people in front of you.
I told him he should put in that thing that says, that you know, one of those things where you pull the ticket down. And it should be now serving number 2. And the ticket, you can see it in there, says like 753. Yeah. But the ticket won't come out.
Yep.
And it's the number on the wall still says 1.
2 or 1. Yeah, 2. I say 2. At least get, you know.
Oh, all right.
Get it something during the day. All right.
There's also a new Trojan virus bouncing around called Clampy that's posing as an online banking threat. So, you know, your bank account's been compromised. And it waits until you log into your bank accounts and then captures all that data and sends it to its own servers.
Right. Nice. All right. Apple, on Thursday, updated its website with a new section on the impact its products are having on the environment. Apple has made public information in several categories, including life cycle impact, product usage impact, and product environmental reports. The company also created a section dedicated to its own environmental updates. Taking a look at the power management section will give you an idea of how extensive the information is that Apple provided. According to Apple, Mac OS X Snow Leopard, or as we call it, Mac OS 10, 10.3 point, left elbow point, J point, blue point, beta Centauri, point Muon, point Hammerhead, point Tuesday, even regulates the processor in between keystrokes, saving power. In between keystrokes.
We've always said the computer spends 99.9 whatever percent of its time waiting for you to do something.
Now, I have a question about that I need you to ponder while I finish reading this. Isn't that going to do a certain amount of damage to the power supply? Going up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down like that. Think about it, particularly if you type fast. Designing green products includes considering the environmental impact of the materials used to make them, reads Apple's website. From the glass, plastic, and metal in our products to the paper and ink in our packaging, our goal is to continue leading the industry in reducing or eliminating environmentally harmful substances. To show how things like packaging can affect the environment, Apple compares the 2006 13-inch MacBook to that of the 2009 13-inch MacBook Pro. The end result? By reducing our packaging over 40% between 2006 and 2009, we ship 50% more boxes in each airline shipping container. That saves one 747 flight for every 32,000 units we ship, according to Apple. The website features a lot more information, including emissions per hour of product use, recycling efforts, what the company has done to reduce energy in its facilities, and how many kittens have been saved. Cute, big-eyed, fluffy little kittens. So do you buy your computers based on their environmental impact? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or outside the 585 area code, 1-800-790-0415.
I like their iPod mass reduction statistics. The 1998 15-inch iMac weighed 18 kilos. The 2009 20-inch iMac is only 8 kilos.
Very
so
nice.
So completely, you know, reducing the weight of the machines, which also reduces transportation costs, which reduces fuel consumption.
Right. For more power and everything else.
Yep.
So it's very nice. It's a nice thing, and Steve's going to put that link up on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. They've done a really nice job with that. It's very comprehensive. Those massive numbers of statistics may be a little much for most of you. There, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't care about most of this stuff. But those who do, that's an excellent thing to be showing them.
And Greenpeace quickly took credit for forcing Apple to do this over the last 10 years, 20 years. They've been continually reducing their products.
Right. So, yeah, the folks at Apple do seem to have an environmental conscience. They seem to be doing whatever they can do to make it work. You know, there are still a lot of environmentally unfriendly materials, particularly the heavy metals that are used in making computers. There's not a lot that can be done about that. They're there. Deal with it. But they're doing what they can around that. And I'm sure that once other materials are available, they'll take advantage of them.
There's an interesting episode of Modern Marvels last night on the History Channel about acid and how absolutely critical different acids
are. Do not take the brown acid. Do not take the brown acid. Sorry.
Well, how critical acids are to modern manufacturing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I don't know. There's, if you see how it's like watching food being prepared, you'd never eat in that restaurant again. Any restaurant, I don't care what the restaurant is, but watching stuff being made is, in general, an environmental nightmare.
Oh, it's like in the military.
Well, there's a whole other set of stories, isn't it?
Oh, I can remember in the mess hall, sitting there. We used to they'd mix up dough, and they'd roll it out. Literally roll it out on like these 8-foot tables. Mm-hmm. And he had one guy on one side of the table, another guy on the other, and there was like this cutout frame for little biscuits. Of course, this is back in the 60s, and we'd stamp it out. But they, the guy rolling out the dough, they'd see the flour bugs, you know, go walking through the dough or the mixed up dough. He'd just pound them back into there, and it's like, okay, that just cured me. I'm not eating biscuits anymore.
Yep.
Ever wonder why your eyes water and burn when you cut onions? It's because onions are high in sulfur.
Yeah, that was.
And a sulfur gas. Yeah, on the acid. The sulfur gas interacts with your tears, which forms sulfuric acid in your eyeballs.
Yes.
Well, that's
yes.
why they say when you're peeling an onion, do it under cold water.
Yeah. To cut down on that on the gas,
or get someone else to do it.
Yeah, or cry a lot because then it just yeah.
Because we can't do this all day.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I don't know. Yeah. It seems to me that in general, places have done. I have at work a Fujitsu tablet PC, which I love it, and the entire case is essentially made out of, and I'm going to get this wrong, cornstarch. It's made out of cornstarch.
So you could eat it.
If necessary, yes, I could. The important thing is that it biodegrades quickly.
I liked when packing peanuts that used to be polystyrene, you know, they converted into a lot of them to cornstarch. You open the box and it smells like Cheerios.
Yes, exactly.
Which it pretty much is.
But the case of the thing is obviously it's a hard plastic. It feels like plastic. It works like plastic. But it's cornstarch. Mm-hmm. The whole, everything except the motherboard, which of course it still has the dangerous heavy metals in it. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And the screen, all the rest of it is made out of this cornstarch plastic, and it disappears in a landfill. I mean, it just disappears.
Yeah, regular plastic comes from petroleum oil, so now they're making plastics out of corn oil.
Right.
Cool. Now we're back to making products out of food instead of eating the food.
Well, and that's the thing. Don't get me started on that.
It's natural. It's all natural.
Don't get me started on that. I cannot imagine. Yep. Any sane society, if you said to them, here's what we're going to do. We're going to burn your food. They would say, take a hike, if they were that polite about it. Here we go. That's a good idea. That's excellent. Let's burn our food. There's got to be a better way to do this.
Ship the extra food to people who don't have food.
There's an idea. Be Christian about it. There's an idea that whose time has not yet come, clearly. All right, back to the computer world. Microsoft has given small system builders, that would be you guys, the green light to start selling new Windows 7 PCs more than a week before the general launch date of October 22nd, according to a Seattle area computer maker. According to John Bach, Bach, the president of Puget Systems. Several Microsoft representatives have told him that his company, which sells custom PCs nationally out of its Auburn, Washington facility, can install Windows 7 on new machines, sell them, and then sell and ship them to customers on October 13th. That date is 9 days before the worldwide October 22nd launch Microsoft has touted, when Windows 7 upgrades are to go on sale at retail, and when large computer manufacturers such as HP and Dell will start selling the systems. For our system builders, we can buy the OEM editions of Windows 7, which should be hitting distribution no later than October 12th, and put them in the hands of our customers on October 13th at the latest, said Bach. Bach also said he had Microsoft's okay in writing. We have a long line of customers who are waiting for Windows 7, said Bach, who added that his sales team had taken informal orders for new Windows 7 machines from about 50 customers. The OEM distribution channel has historically been more flexible than that for large computer makers, both as an operating system reaches its end of life and before it's contracted to ship from the likes of HP and Dell. Bach's mention of end of life referred to the ups and downs of Microsoft's plans for Windows XP. Originally, Microsoft extended XP's availability for 5 months in September 2007, but it then added to its lifespan several times after that, including an exception for notebooks that still continues and an extension to distributors that allows them to ship the OEM versions of the 8-year-old OS through late May 2009. The last was a move to quieting complaints from system builders, the smaller shops and computer dealers that build PCs to order, who wanted to keep selling XP machines because of customer demand. The great thing for us is that we'll be able to install Windows 7 on new computers before October 13th, since Windows 7 allows installation without a product key, said Bach. And then on the 13th, after we have the product keys from our distributor, we can pop them in and start shipping immediately. So my question is, how excited are you for Windows 7? Give us a call. Tell us about it. The number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, 1-800-790-0415. Assuming you're in, randomly say, Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Or anywhere.
Right.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know how many folks are actually going to, because we were talking about it last night in Second Life, how they're going to have these house parties, and how many folks are actually going to have a house party, you know, celebrating.
I did find one in Rochester. They've closed the program, so you can't sign up to have a house party anymore.
What?
I guess it's full. You can't make a new one, but there's only one in Rochester. Hi, Jamel. How you doing?
Yeah. So that better be a big house.
Yeah. But it's an interesting marketing strategy. Instead of Microsoft putting out a lot of money marketing Windows 7, they're making us do it.
Remember XP when we went to Egghead?
Yeah, vaguely.
And we were there at midnight when they announced XP. We were at Egghead. Yep. We were making bacon and eggs and ham.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Sausage and eggs. As people came in at midnight buying XP discs by the millions. And then I would ask people.
Was it XP or 98? I think that was 98.
Oh, it might have been. You're right.
Yeah,
you're
right.
It was 98. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. Because we were going from Windows 95 to 98, because the big thing with 98 is that I was excited about was that it was going to support more of the ports, the COM ports.
Right. So, yeah, it was 98. And I would ask people, you know, it's midnight. Are you going to stay up all night installing this operating system? Most people said, no, we're going to wait until whatever the next holiday was, Columbus Day or whatever the next. There was a weekend holiday a week and a half away.
Mm-hmm. It was Columbus. June of 98. So,
no,
it
wouldn't
be. Yeah, 25 June.
4th of July.
Yeah, 4th of July weekend.
4th of July weekend. That was it. And so I said, you know, I kept saying, are you going to wait? Are you going to install it? No, I'm going to wait till 4th of July weekend. Then why are you here now? Well, okay.
Because it's a party at Egghead.
Yeah. Whatever works. That's exactly right, because it's a party at Egghead. And we had fun. We had fun with that. But apparently they're not doing that now. They don't have a lot of money. That's why they have to sell you Windows 7. It should be an interesting experience. The problem is they just did too good a job with XP.
Yeah. Yep.
It actually works. It continues to work every day. And if they continued to support it, it would continue to work every day.
Well,
but the problem is they can't make any money if you don't buy a new operating system.
Right, but the thing of it is right now, they've got to also realize folks just don't have the money to pull the trigger.
Well, yeah, this is a really kind of terrible time.
Just for him to get out a system that people will be talking about positively,
right,
is going to be a major coup. Because You know, Mac has been slamming them. People have been slamming Vista. You know, there's a lot of folks say, well, yeah, I've got Vista and it runs okay. It was just like Windows ME.
You said it, not me.
I know. I just sent shivers up my spine. Anyways, you know, the folks tolerated it.
Right.
But it was not something that they were in love with. XP, they have gotten very comfortable with. Like you say, there are very few crashes. The updates are working. It's copacetic. And they're getting their business done. Granted, once they go to the new Windows 7, as they get new machines in, it'll sort of blend in happily.
Right.
Whereas Vista was a big thorn in a lot of people's sides. That, you know, it's like, man, get this out of here. I don't want it.
Right. All right.
No way, no how.
All right. Shall we...
No, we got it coming up on a break. Yeah, we do have Frank there on
On the line. Frank, hold on. We'll get to you after the break. We'll have to wait until after the break to do that. But I will say that I'm listening to the music. So I guess what I will say is we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Frank on the line, and all of you in the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbite. So stay tuned. You are listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1, one of the very few jazz stations left in the world, and they were kind enough to keep us on the air, so let's make them happy by staying tuned.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Lifetime Assistance, presenting jazz saxophonist and three-time Grammy winner Branford Marsalis, performing live at the new Eastman Theater on Sunday, October 18th at 7 p.m. This concert will celebrate Lifetime Assistance Foundation's annual Inspiration Award event. Tickets for the Branford Marsalis performance at the Eastman Theater are available through Ticketmaster at 232-1900, Ticketmaster.com, and all Ticketmaster outlets.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Frank on the line who's been patiently waiting as we babbled away through the last segment. Frank, where are you calling from?
Rochester, New York.
Yes, sir. What can we do for you?
Okay. My very first computer was a Toshiba with Lotus.
Oh, heck yeah.
Well, anyway, I never realized, you know,
was it the character-based Lotus 1-2-3?
Character-based? I don't know.
In other words, it wasn't...
Smart Suite. Lotus Smart Suite.
Oh, yeah. Lotus, I love Lotus Smart Suite.
Yeah. Well, it's a great program, and I was typing out things and putting them on CD and sending them to my friends, never realizing they couldn't open up Lotus.
Right. If you ran it as the native, if you saved things in the native Smart Suite format, people who didn't have Smart Suite couldn't open it up.
Right. It came out as gibberish.
Yep.
I know there's a way of exporting it to WordPerfect and everything else.
Right.
How do I do that?
You do a save as.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you still have Lotus Smart Suite?
Yes, I do.
It's a save as.
Okay.
And from the file menu, it's file save as, and then there should be a separate drop down box that probably says it's been so long since I've used Smart Suite. That says something like format or type, and if you drop that down, you'll see Microsoft Word.doc. You'll see WordPerfect.wpd. I think it used to be, and a couple of others. So pick whichever one of those you want. And then save the file. Now, it'll be a very old version of Word, but it should work.
Uh-huh. I'm just wondering if it's not a file save as. Sometimes, if you don't see it there, sometimes it's an export.
Right. I saw it under export, and I exported it to three or four different words, you know, WordPerfects, and it still it wouldn't translate.
How about just exporting it out as a simple text file?
Yes, text. And the other thing, too, is that you have to give it the right file extension. If you're sending it to Microsoft Word, it has to be something .doc.
You may have to put the extension in by hand. The other thing you might try is RTF, rich text format.
Right, it does come out as rich text.
That should be readable by dang near everybody.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that does come out as rich text.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So use that one. That's the one that's universal.
Mm-hmm. Rich text is universal. Though.
Yes, yeah. It is.
I thought so, because all computers have to have some kind of common language.
Well, and text, that's the one. Text is the lowest common denominator, and then Microsoft created the rich text format so you can put graphics and formatting mm-hmm. instead of just the raw text.
I see.
Right, and everybody uses it. I tend to save everything in RTF. Even, you know, I use OpenOffice, and I can read and write Word, regular Word and Excel and PowerPoint, all the versions. And I can read and write WordPerfect and probably SmartSuite, Lotus SmartSuite. But I tend to use the RTF for documents, because then no matter who I give it to, no matter what they're using, even if it's just WordPad, they can, because WordPad's format is RTF, so they should be able to read it all the way around.
Oh, great. Okay. I will try that save as then.
Yeah, definitely, or export, whichever one it is, but use RTF if it's available, because that's the one, like I said, even if they only have WordPad, which mm-hmm. comes with Windows, they should be able to read it.
Right. Okay, great.
Okie doke.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Frank.
I think, didn't IBM make the Lotus a free download now?
Yes.
So yeah, so leftover Lotus. If you still want to use Lotus, you can download it yourself now.
Yeah, there Symfony is. Actually.
Yeah,
it's Lotus Symfony now, not SmartSuite. They changed the name at some point. They were selling it as Lotus Symfony. It's excellent, by the way. It's excellent, mm-hmm. and it's a free download for Windows, for Linux. I can get it right through my apt-get. I don't even have to go anywhere. Just aptitude install Lotus Symfony rather. Probably you can get it for the Mac as well, I suspect.
I'm looking.
So it's a pretty neat product, actually. It's very, very nice. It's from, you know, it used to be from Lotus, yep. Then IBM yep. bought them. It's an IBM product. They do awfully good work.
Yeah, Linux, Mac, Red Hat, SUSE, Ubuntu, and Windows.
Yep. So if you're looking for a suite and you don't want to spend $700 for a Microsoft Office, check out, Steve will put the link.
And it's in two dozen languages, too.
Two dozen languages, it's got everything. Yes, it's different from Office in that you have to learn where the menu choices are, but it's like I've always said, it's like buying a new car, which I'm hoping to do, by the way, very soon. It's like buying a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is.
Trivia question for you.
Yeah.
Who used to hand out M&Ms?
We're perfect.
Bingo.
Absolutely.
Every time it crashed, they threw M&Ms to the audience.
Right. Or somebody answered a question.
Somebody answered
a
question. I was selling it at the time, so I knew everything. So I didn't know. I would have to not raise my hand at meetings because I knew all the answers. It was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool product. And you know that you can still download from Dan Bricklin's website, you can download the original
WordPerfect.
VisiCalc.
Really?
The original VisiCalc, and it still works under XP. So in Windows 7, it'll run in the XP emulation box, which, by the way, is an actual, it's a virtual machine running XP separately. It's kind of cool, actually.
Sweet.
And it runs in text mode, and it does all of that stuff. It's very, very cool. It's very, very cool. All right, our next caller is Vito. Vito, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from a parked car.
Excellent.
So thank you very much.
Wait a minute, are you homeless now?
Enjoy your show.
Yeah, are you homeless or are you just staking out somebody? Yo, Vito, first follow Vinny. Yeah.
I pulled over knowing you'd be coming on the line for me.
That's it. Don't talk while you're driving. Good for you, Vito. What's your question?
Okay, whenever I go to open an AVI file, I get a problem. It says Windows wants to send a message home to Microsoft, and the computer restarts. So This is not the first time I had the problem. So I went into the data execution protection. I turned it off, did apply, restarted the computer, and I still get this problem. And previously, I've had this for about 3 months now. The first time it happened, I put the file in a separate folder, and sure enough, it worked. But since then, a lot of updates have been made, and I cannot get rid of this problem. So any AVI file just bombs out.
But other media formats work okay?
Yes, yes. I try to open it up in Media Player, and it says open with Media Player. And if I can get it there before the Windows wants to send a message home, it'll play, but it's a pain in the neck because it wants to restart the computer otherwise.
What it sounds like is the AVI codec, the code execution module for AVI, is corrupted in some way. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Because if other AVI files play and that doesn't, maybe what you need to do is download the codec again.
I'd almost think to uninstall and reinstall Windows Media Player.
That should do it.
Which should reload that codec also.
Right, right. That's probably the best, easiest way to do it.
Okay, where do I find it?
You go into the control panel.
It may not be because it's a fundamental part of Windows.
Yeah, hold on.
So if you go to Microsoft and download the current version of Media Player, that might be the first place to start at.
I cannot follow you.
You go to the Microsoft website and download the current version of Media Player.
Right.
We're thinking there may not be an uninstall of Media Player because it's a core feature of Windows.
Right.
Right.
But if you reinstall the current version, which may be an updated version from what you have, that may fix your problem.
That's probably your best bet.
Okay.
And Steve will post a link as soon as he finds it to the download for the Media Player. And
so that'll go right on top of the one that's already in there, you're saying?
Right, right, right.
It'll
probably ask you sure you want to do this? Because then you have to, you're going to replace it. Well, yes, I want to do that. Thank you. And then it should do it.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling.
I like your show.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Do us a favor. Tell a friend that you found us, and hopefully they'll pass it on to other friends.
That's what we'd like to hear. Thanks, Vito.
There's different download links.
Go back to driving.
Yeah. There's different download links for each operating system version.
Or he could have been staking somebody out. I like that theory better. Adds a little more mystery to our show.
Oh, and there is a codec installation package where you can install codecs separately.
Oh, there you go.
But I'd probably start with the full Media Player
11.
Right,
but they're both on that same page, so if you just put it, Steve will put up a link to that page, and then Vito should start with reinstalling the whole thing, and then... if that doesn't work, reinstall the codecs.
Talk about installing things. Before I came to the show, I was talking to Dolores Newt.
Yep.
And she's evidently got an iTouch. And she downloaded the Kindle app.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And she says she is just loving it.
Yep.
And it's really neat if you also have a real Kindle. They synchronize each other. So you read a few pages on your Kindle, and you read a few pages on your iPod, and then it knows which page you left off on both.
Yep.
Whereas my friend Wyoon wound up pulling the trigger, and he wound up getting a iPhone.
Yeah.
Had to get out of his other deal.
Well, and that's part
of
the problem.
Phone, and he's going, oh, what have I done? But he has gotten into... setting everything up. He loves his gadgets and the toys and the stuff, though. The apps.
Well, I'll tell you what I like. There's two apps that I actually kind of like. One is called Stanza, which lets you read books on here. I have all of H.P. Lovecraft. I don't sleep at night anymore. And then there's a company called CourseSmart, which makes many of the textbooks we use in the college. The E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. Very nice. And you can actually load, if you have access to their e-textbooks, and as a faculty member I do, as a part-time faculty, I can actually download the e-textbooks for the courses I'm teaching right into this iTouch. iTouch, is that all right? I mean, I know it's the iPod Touch.
The iPod Touch is the official product name. Everyone calls it an iTouch.
Yeah, that's what I do. Because I've been, matter of fact, for my birthday, my crew got me a $25 gift card. For the iTouch.
Nice. Store. Cool. But yeah, it's really neat to be able to run all those extra applications and
I'm sticking with the free apps. The only one I've paid for is Movie Genie, which connects you to the Internet Movie Database, which I can't live without.
I'd open the web page for the Internet Movie Database.
Right.
But yeah, and I've, you know, I've got 6 or 7 pages of free apps. It's really cool. There's so many cool things.
Oh, I've gone wild with the apps. Right.
Our next caller is Victor. Where are you calling from, Victor?
Round of Quake.
We had this discussion last week, didn't you?
I got 2 questions. One, as we get older, our eyes aren't as good as you guys know.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? I'm fine, but my eyes are getting old.
There you go. But the Windows XP calculator is really small. Is there like a desktop calculator that's maybe 3 or 4 times as big someplace where you could use instead of that Windows calculator? And the second one is, I don't use IE8 very often, only when I absolutely have to, but I want it right. And I cannot find that compatibility view button. Up in the top, next to my address bar, I have a refresh and I have an X. And that's where it's supposed to be, and it's not there. Is there any way of finding it?
You can customize your toolbar, and maybe you've accidentally removed it.
Okay, how does that work?
Is that Tools Options, I think?
I think so, yeah.
To customize the toolbar to put the buttons you want up there?
If you right-click on any toolbar, not in an icon, but in the bar behind the icon, and sometimes it's a little tough to do that. But if you do that, you get a drop-down menu, and one of the choices is customize, and that will let you customize that particular toolbar.
I tried that, now remember, but I didn't see it there.
The customize button?
No, I saw that, the compatibility view button there.
It may not be called that. Let me see. What version of Word is it? I think I have 2004 on this machine.
You're talking about 2007?
Windows Internet Explorer version 8. That little... So it's supposed to be next to the address bar where you click it, and it'll update the old websites to...
The new
version.
None of us are running Internet Explorer.
And again, what was your other question, though? You had 2 questions.
Calculator, a big calculator that you can put on a desktop.
All right. What I would recommend there is go to download.com,
mm-hmm.
and that's CNET's website, and just do a Google search, or just do a search there, mm-hmm. or PC Magazine. They've got a lot of utilities there, free ones, and calculator is, I know for a fact, you know, some of the free utilities that, you know, like you said, that are very big, and you can get all kinds of calculators, whether you're doing just straight calculations or, you know, angles or whatever, scientific.
Okay. I can do that. Customized toolbar, and that compatibility view is not there at all.
Right, right. Where compatibility view is, in the where you can type in your... Hello, hi, how are you? Where you can type in the URLs you want to go to.
Right.
Next to that... on the far right of that is that X, that red X.
Right.
Next to that are the 2 little circling arrows.
That's the refresh button.
Yeah.
And next to that should be a broken document.
Right, it's not there.
Really?
Can I make my address thing smaller? Is that possible? Maybe it's too big?
Maybe it's too small.
Because next to the X...
here it is. Now, in the Tools menu, there's a compatibility view command. And a compatibility view settings
command. I see that, okay.
So go there.
So compatibility view settings, turn on, display internet sites and compatibility view.
And display all sites and compatibility view. Okay, I got that. I closed it out, and it's still not there.
Well, but now they're already done.
Okay.
It's now done. You don't get the little button, and I don't know why, but you've done what you've done is you've made compatibility mode work.
Oh, all right, so I don't have to do it one by one then.
Right, and there's a company called Sensory Software, and Steve will put up the link. It's sensorysoftware.com/bigcalculator.html.
Beautiful.
It's a free download. Now, I don't know anything about this software, so let me suggest that before you install it, you check it for viruses, because I don't know this software.
Okay.
And for those of you who are having visual problems, it also, if you have SAPI 4.0, it'll use that speech.
Your arms aren't long enough.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you very much.
There you go. There you go. That's a...
There's an app for that.
There is an app for that. Well, and that's the thing. You know, it's they've got... It's just basically little short programs now. They're called apps. And
yeah, I've got so many different ones for one of the local channels to stay up on top of the news and weather.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like I say, there's an app for that. I wound up getting another one just to keep track of my mileage.
Yep.
Because I have to keep a track of the beginning mileage and at the end for the wife, because then I got to turn it in once a month.
On each job, yeah.
Yep. So I just do that, and it's just made life so much simpler.
I've got one that tracks gas stations to find the cheapest gas.
Oh, right. But you've got an iPhone.
Well, no, that's my problem. I just have the iPod, so I have to have Wi-Fi to have that list updated. But it uses the coordinates to find where I am. And it seems that Henrietta has the cheapest gas around here of all the different little suburbs.
I go to Joe's. He's got inexpensive gas and great
service.
I think
I paid $2.55.
There you go.
It's in Henrietta.
$2.79 in Fairport by my house.
Yep. All right, we are going to take a quick break. This is the top of the hour break, so it's going to be slightly longer, but don't go anywhere because we are going to be right back. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. Give us a call at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbite, on member-supported Jazz 90.1, our new home, and we're happy, happy, happy to be here.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Drummer Matt Johnson is sitting in this week, but the subject turns to early days at Disneyland with then-yet-to-be big band leader Tom Kubis.
He used to, when we worked at Disneyland, on our breaks, he'd go upstairs and he would write on a single piece of manuscript paper a trumpet part, clarinet part, trombone part, just of one chorus of a popular tune. And he goes, okay, we're going to play, you know, whatever, Royal Garden Blues. And after the solos, play this. So we would, on our 30-minute break, we would create a brand new arrangement, and the guys would memorize it, and it would be completely hip. Yeah. And we'd go down, you know, to do our little strolling set in Fantasyland and playing this hip swinging version. They didn't want us just walking out on the set and then walking back to the dressing room. We had to actually stroll. We had to play a little tune. So everybody was opposed to this, you know. It's hot, and we've just blown our brains out, and we want to go on our break. Now you're going to make us work all the way to the door, right? So that year, Sting had a tune called Every Breath You Take. Every breath you take, you know, kind of straight A thing like that. So Tom wrote a Dixieland arrangement of that. Super doo doo doo, ducka doo doo ga doo, bapa doo doo doo. I seem to recall on Hi Ho. Hi Ho, Hi Ho, it's off the roof. But he used the bass line for Killer Joe. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom. Hi ho, hi ho. Anyway, he called it Killer Ho. And we used to stroll around Disneyland playing that.
Did you ever get any flack from anybody?
No, it was completely over everybody's head. And yet, you know, people would see the group and they'd go, yeah, the Jazz Miners, all right.
Matt Johnson, my guest this week, I'm Helen Borgers.
Hear a full hour of Sitting In with Helen Borgers every Friday at noon on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The worst pain I've ever felt came from shingles. As a healthy, active woman in my early 60s, it kept me from sleeping at night. It made it hard for me to work and enjoy my active lifestyle. I didn't know a simple vaccination could have helped me avoid getting shingles.
This is Dr. Susan Rehm of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, reminding you that vaccines can help prevent shingles and other serious adult diseases. Speak with your doctor about vaccination and visit www.adultvaccination.org.
If you're stuck on an island and you have to have five things, what's one thing that you would have? Mine would probably be a radio. I can't live without the radio. Yeah.
New artist Josh Hogue talking about radio.
I actually still listen to radio all across the country, so just to kind of stay current, and that's where I discover a lot of new things that I like.
Radio, always there, always something special for everyone. Go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
The infamous Harry Lake.
The infamous Harry Lake. I'm both delighted and thrilled that Victor called back and was pleased with the XP, the calculator, the download. And I'm a little surprised that we gave him an answer that actually worked. But,
we're one for one.
We're one for one. That's all that really counts for us. We're quitting while we're ahead. No more counting. All right. Here's our chance to screw up. Our next caller is Sam. Sam, where are you calling from?
Rochester, New York.
Yes, sir. What can we do for you?
I'd like to talk to Steve. I've got an iPod, and I've got it on, it's a code, I guess, on there. You can't get into it. I want to know how to get the code out of there.
I don't know what you mean by code.
Yeah, do you mean it's locked, and it's asking for the code to open it up?
Yeah.
The password code?
Enter code.
Yeah, you have to give it the code you created.
I didn't create. I must have accidentally punched in one, and I don't know what I did because I wasn't watching when I did it. So how do I get back into it to get the code out of there so I can use the iPod?
There's something you do when you plug it back into your computer. Let me find this. There's a link at Apple I'm looking for. If you sync it back to your computer, it should unlock it. But then if you actually don't remember your password...
I do not.
You have to erase the iPod and restore it.
So how do you do that?
When you connect it to your computer inside of iTunes, there's a restore button.
Okay.
What you do is you have to click on the iPod itself and on the screen that shows up after you click on the, you know, down on the left-hand side, there's all those things, and one of them, when you plug in the iPod, the iPod actually shows up there in that list down on the left. You click on the iPod there, and you get a screen that includes all kinds of information, including a restore button.
Okay, thank you very much.
There you go.
Yep, bye now.
Yep. There's a cautionary tale for all of you folks out there. And I don't care if it's an iPod or a laptop or whatever.
Your computer's administrator password, please remember that.
Please remember it. Oh, I don't know. I said that a long time ago and don't remember it. What you're actually saying is you don't... Never mind. But here's the point. When you set a password, either remember it or write it down, seal in an envelope, keep it somewhere safe. Remember that you did that... And then when you have to bring it to one of these guys to get it fixed, bring that with you. They can't do magic. They won't do magic. If they can do magic, it's very expensive magic, and you will pay for that magic.
Well, there's some brands, I believe it's HP, that we can't.
Right.
You have to send it back to the manufacturer because they will not give that out on how to reset it. It has to, the motherboard has to be hooked up to this device back at the factory for them to clear out the password.
Right.
There is no workarounds.
Right.
And they're hosed.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, there's... these guys are incredibly good at what they do, but they don't do miracles. So be very, very careful. Whenever you are asked to enter... there are a million programs like Passkeeper that are free to download from the internet or KeePass.
RoboForm.
KeePass, whatever. RoboForm, I don't think... encrypts all your stuff.
Yeah.
Does it? All right, that's good. The new version does.
The new,
all right,
the paid
all right.
one.
All right, yes, one. Yes. But I'm talking about KeePass or yep. Passkeeper. Those are both free. Mm-hmm. And you open them up, and you have to remember that password. And you can't recover that password. But when you open it up with that password, you can keep all of your websites and usernames and passwords and everything in there. And then you only really have to remember the one password you use to get into that.
In fact, 1Password is one of those really good programs.
1Password is another one, yep. Exactly. So, it's not, there's no excuse anymore for not remembering what your passwords are because you can keep them safe on your machine.
Now, what may have happened in, what was it, Sam, right? What may have happened in his case is he was fiddling with his settings and he turned on a password without realizing it.
That's certainly a possibility.
Yeah.
In which case, the password is probably enter.
Well, it's a four-digit number.
Oh.
So if you spin your combination randomly, you have no idea what that number is.
Right.
All right, kiddies. We all know what that sound means. So get your footy jammies on. Grab your mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. Because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, you know the despairing story last week?
Yeah.
Remind us.
My dirt box was gone.
Yeah, your dirt right. box was gone. I remember that completely.
Guess what?
It came back?
I'm not asking any questions, not pointing any fingers. All I know is it showed back up.
Nice.
So my 15-year-old plus box of dirt, which I know it was trivial. I was already to do wanted posters. Have you seen this dirt box? You know, post them up on telephone poles and all this other stuff. It came back. And I know, it's out of all the things I have in the shop, it's just one thing that, is a lot of memorabilia to me.
I'll guarantee you what happened was some parent was listening and thought, that's where my kid got that.
Well, all I can say is I'm glad to have it back.
That's all that counts. Somebody snuck it back in, that's fine.
I don't ask questions. I'm just glad to have it back. It's back on the counter. It's got the little buds in it. It wasn't disturbed or anything. It's there, for folks to still enjoy. You mean that grows in my machine? Yep. And it's just something that's been with me that long. Compared to the hard drives that I've taken apart, and open those up, and I've had kids bend back the armatures and that on there. Oh, what's this do? All right, I'll put out another one next time it breaks.
Yep.
Show platters and all that type of stuff. But the dirt box, it was something stupid.
Well, it's heartwarming to hear.
Yeah.
A happy ending.
I'm just glad that it finally showed up, that I didn't have to spend the money for the wanted posters and everything else. Go out. Pole to pole, pasting it up and cluttering with more paper than that. But
let me applaud whoever brought it back.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Well done, sir or madam.
Mm-hmm. So that was our rant. That was a good one this week.
Yep, very nice, very very nice. All right, kiddies, that's the end of Story Hour with Uncle Dave. So. You can rinse out your hot cocoa mugs, change back out of your jammies, and if we can strap them down, we'll put them back on the shelf for another week for another Story Hour with Uncle Dave. And it's back to what we do when we're not listening to Story Hour from Uncle Dave, and we'll start with some more news.
Yeah, that works.
Apple may be ready to introduce a new line of iMac all-in-one desktop computers before the end of the year, according to a new report on Apple Insider, citing, and I quote, people familiar, unquote, with Apple's plans. Apple Insider said the new iMacs got the go-ahead in early September and have been in production for the past couple of weeks. In addition to a new thinner enclosure, the new iMac line is rumored to possibly include a Blu-ray optical drive. This would mark the first time Apple would include a Blu-ray drive in one of its desktop or portable computers. Based on previous updates from Apple, it's reasonable to expect the company to also include faster processors, perhaps newer graphics cards, and increased hard drive capacity. Current models feature processors ranging from 2.66 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo to 3.06 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo. Hard drive capabilities would go from 320 gigabytes in the low-end model to 1 terabyte in the high-end. Apple also usually keeps the prices of its updated machines pretty close to the previous ones, although they have reduced prices on occasion. The current prices range from $11.99 to $21.99. So our question to you, are you looking forward to a Mac with Blu-ray? Geek out on your Mac-ness. Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, 1-800-790-0415.
I almost don't see them putting a Blu-ray drive in because they're expensive. And that would raise the the fact that it doesn't really do anything for you on a 20 or 25 inch monitor. You need a 40 or 50 inch monitor before you see any difference. But it's one of those feature checkboxes that other computers have Blu-ray, so they should have one too.
Right. And it depends. I mean, if what you want is for backup.
Yeah, then you've got 50 gigabytes per disc.
I went over to my partner's house, Dan, because he's just got a new house, and he's got one of those projectors.
Yeah, that's a really cool way to watch movies. $1,000 gives you a 100-inch television.
It's like an 8-foot screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's 8 foot by, it's got to be about 4 foot. We sat back in the one chair, and it's like, holy mackerel, it's like being in the theater.
Yep.
And the clarity, I mean, it just...
If you've got Blu-ray, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
A lot of people, though, aren't going out and buying Blu-ray drives. They're going out and buying PS3s.
Yeah, especially now that the price just dropped $100. Actually, all three gaming consoles are dropping prices this week, up to $100. I think it was the PS3. The Wii dropped $50. The Xbox is dropping, I think, $100. And so the PS3 is currently the best way to get a Blu-ray player because you also get a gaming console
for the same price.
For about $300.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of people are doing that.
And again, they're all hurting too, because the number of folks that didn't buy them.
It's individual games are expensive. $60 for the average game. Halo ODST came out last week, and of course, my son had to have it.
Sure he did.
Leaving little notes all over the house. 10 days left, 5 days left, got to pre-order it.
Something drop shock troops. I forget what the O stands
Orbital.
For. Orbital drop shock troops, Yeah.
So instead of coming down in a spaceship, they come down in space suits one at a time.
Oh, there you go. I will say that I have played Halo, and I am deadly in a Warthog.
Yeah.
Against my own teammates. But I am deadly in a Warthog.
The next time you have one of your Halo nights at school, you got to invite Matthew.
Yeah, right.
Because you guys use the projectors, right?
right.
And see, that's really cool, playing a video game on a projector.
Yeah, we do that at school once in a while. My minions, we host a game night, and we bring... a couple of Wiis or a couple of Xboxes or whatever it is we bring, and we play games all night. We put it up on the big projector, and we play against each other. We played Lego Indiana Jones, and one of my guys was Indiana Jones. One of my guys kept coming up behind me and hitting me in the head with a shovel. Apparently just because he could.
But their way of getting even with
you. He was on my side, so he and I just had a little battle. We ignored the whole rest of the game and just stood there and fought each other for a while. It was very funny, actually. It was very, very funny.
You know, which still goes back to the other story that you were talking about. And I still wonder, because I know I've got at least 6 folks that are right now. I've literally talked them out of buying a system right at the moment.
Yep.
And they're waiting until October 22nd to get another system. Because they really need it. And they were literally thanking me because I said, well, why get it right now? Well, what do you mean? I says, in a few weeks, this Windows 7 is going to be out.
And that's if it were another 6 months, I would say, make a decision. But it's 3 weeks.
It's just been the past 6 weeks that I've started telling folks, let's hold off. Why pay an extra $100, $200 and the aggravation of having to upgrade because I won't sell Vista. So with XP going from XP to Windows 7, you've got to run the utility backup.
The big companies, if you buy a new PC with Vista, Microsoft is giving a free upgrade to Windows 7, but then you got to go through the upgrade hassle.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And hope that everything works. And again, folks say, I can just get the upgrade. Here's the key thing, folks, and this is what I'm going to preach from now until it comes out. Before you even think, even before it comes a glimmer in your eye, take the time to check out your machine that it's going to have the drivers. Yes, the OS will go in, no problem. But the key thing is going to be, is there going to be a driver there for your video card, your sound card, your modem, your network card, your motherboard, any of the other peripherals that are going to, you know,
your printer, yeah, your monitor.
Make sure those are all in place before you even think about doing this upgrade, because you could be in the middle of it. Yes, you will have an OS, but nothing else will, that hangs off of it will work.
Right. And it's very important to realize that that was the problem people had with Vista. They either were unprepared or there really weren't any drivers, and so that's what made it die.
Vista itself wasn't really bad. It's when you wanted to plug something else into it.
That's
your
right.
Your software didn't run on it. Your peripherals didn't run on it.
And the biggest downfall for Vista was the backwards compatibility.
Yep.
Right.
Microsoft, luckily, some team realized that they, you know, have maintained that always. Even with any of their Office products and everything else, even if you had the latest, you could always read the previous. And that's the same with the OS.
That's been a big thing Apple's has fought and overcome for years, is that eventually you have to sacrifice backward compatibility to get new enhanced features.
Right.
And this last 10.6 update Apple put out is Intel only, so that only works for computers since January 2006. That's 3.5 years, almost 4 years. Which is a long time in computer terms, but people with perfectly good G5s, there were quad processor G5 models, cannot run the current operating system and current software because Apple is sacrificing them to make the future ones better.
But they run Linux just great.
Run Linux just great.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I actually want to talk about netbooks and why, when you go to buy a netbook, you need to be careful. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or 1-800-790-0415. At 19 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, I'm Chris Noth. When I was just 9 years old, I lost my father in a car accident, leaving my mother to care for me and my two brothers. My mom did a great job of providing for us, but her job was made a lot easier because my father had life insurance. If the worst were to happen, would your family be okay? That's a question all of us need to ask ourselves, especially now. So many people are struggling. Life is unpredictable. Be smart. Educate yourself at lifehappens.org.
A public service message from the nonprofit Life Foundation.
Here's what people are saying about Jazz 90.1.
I'm really enjoying your program tonight. Thank you so much for playing live jazz on the radio.
I'm an old jitterbug lady, now 83, who still enjoys all that great music.
I want to thank you for supporting local talent.
What you do is great, man. I really think you got a good station. I am so glad that Progressive Radio is still alive. Progressive Radio lives, and God bless you.
Hi, I'm ecstatic that Sound Bites found a new home on Jazz. I thank you, and I love you guys.
Hi, I'm listening to your station tonight, and it's absolutely fantastic. The string of songs you're playing are absolutely great.
I enjoy all of your hosts.
Enjoy your station a great deal. It's really cool. I think your jazz station is one of the best I've ever heard. It's really great.
I finally found a station, and I like their music, and I hope you never go out of business.
This is station manager Rob Linton. Thank you to all of our members and listeners for supporting great jazz radio, Jazz 90.1.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Now, before we left, I said I was going to talk about netbooks.
Yeah, I was just going to interrupt you for 1 second. Yeah, in that commercial, we had one of our listeners from Soundbites saying that he was glad Soundbites found a new home and glad we're here, and I want to just thank him.
Very nice. Very nice. And we do thank the folks at Jazz 90.1 who were, in particular, Mr. Rob Linton, who was kind enough to bring us here and give
who
us a one. Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen. who was glad to bring us here and give us a new home. But I was going to talk about netbooks.
Yeah.
When you look to buy a new machine, I have a lot of people who are asking me, you know, let me think about getting a netbook because you can get them for $200, $300, $400. And that's pretty inexpensive. The thing you have to do is remember that a netbook is not a desktop, and it's in particular not even a laptop. It's slower. It's got less memory, and therefore it's a little less capable. If you want to play games or you want to get online and do lots of video stuff, it may not necessarily be the machine for you. You also have to remember that if you're going to try to run Windows on it, it's going to be even slower. I own a netbook. It's a Lenovo S10e IdeaPad, and it's a wonderful thing. And it ran okay under Windows, and just okay. I wiped it out and put Linux on it, and it flies. It absolutely flies, but it's running Linux, not Windows. Windows is slower, particularly it's only got a meg and a half, a gig and a half of RAM, and you have to be very careful of what it is you expect out of a netbook.
Yeah, we had a customer come into the store a week or so ago and said, I just bought this netbook, and it's really slow. And I said, yes. Well, how do I make it faster? Buy a different computer.
Yeah, or run Linux on it.
Right. I put a gig of RAM in it. Okay.
Yeah.
I was porked off, though.
They don't have the same processor in it. They don't have the same back-end bus. They don't have, you know, everything is a slightly slower, slightly lower power component. And when you add all that together, you get a slower machine. It may be fine for what you want to do. If you want to surf the net some, do a little bit of writing,
and
whatever.
Not playing games online.
Exactly. And not play online games, or, you know, you're certainly not going to be loading Halo onto this thing. But, you know, if it is a modest device that does modest things very well.
Well, I was porked off, though.
Uh-oh.
Woot?
Yeah.
Woot.
Yeah. They had a boot off yesterday.
It was a couple days ago. I clicked on it, and there was the Triple E books.
Yep.
Already sold out.
Yep.
And I was checking this. It was like 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
It's like. And they were already gone.
The thing turns over at 1 a.m.
Well,
so you know you're old now. So when you get up for that middle of the night, you know what? Yeah. Then on your way back from the bathroom, toddle into the computer room and check it out.
Yeah, midnight Central Time is when it puts up its
new
items. Yeah,
in Chicago, I think it is.
Yeah,
but you want to be careful. I love my netbook, but I don't expect. And I've actually run video on this. I run YouTube videos all the time and whatever. But again, I'm on Linux. It uses many fewer resources than Windows does, and even then, it's not perfect. But it's a pretty neat thing, and it's a wonderful device, easy to carry around. I get 4.5 hours of battery life out of it.
They were selling it for 2.25.
I know.
I would have snapped one up.
I know.
For $225,
I know.
Like you say,
it might
so
be back.
Cheap.
Yeah, they'll be back. Don't worry, they'll be back.
Yeah, but trying to catch them.
Well, if it's not a woot, well, right, even if it's not a woot off, you got to catch. I'm telling you, when you get up for your little 3 a.m. constitutional, on your way back, check it out
downstairs.
Then.
I'd have to put a computer upstairs.
Right. Well, and there's the problem. If you already had one of these, you could leave.
I ain't justifying that to the
yeah,
wife.
Right.
No. Honey, can we have a computer in the bathroom?
Yeah, right.
I keep threatening Sam to put a phone in the bathroom for her.
Right.
Well, that was always the sign of the fancy hotels, is that there was a phone in the bathroom.
Yeah. I have a phone in my bathroom.
Just don't flush when you're online.
And here's the problem. Back when my mother was still alive, God rest her soul, she spent the last couple of years of her life in a hospital bed in our living room. And so the problem was, even if I said, Ma, I'm going to the bathroom, don't answer the phone, she would try to get out of bed, of course, fall on the floor. So I had a phone installed in the bathroom, and I thought, this is civilized. This is actually civilized. The problem was, my friend Lou would call me all the time. The first words out of his mouth, you in the bathroom? Because I'm not talking to you if you're in the bathroom.
Flush the toilet. Or just at least get the sink water running.
Yeah, right. I did it several times. I'd be in the kitchen where the real, you know, where the regular phone was, and I go, no, why? And I turned on the faucet. He go, ah, you hang up. That is probably way too much information, but
TMI.
And so, soon after my wife and I bought our house, my father-in-law gave me a red phone and said hotline on it to put in the bathroom. It was very funny because he knew that story. But yeah, I'm currently running Ubuntu on my netbook, and I love it. I've also run Xubuntu, which is very nifty, which is really, I'm shocked. When I first ran Xubuntu, it was XFCE. It was okay. But over the last couple of years, it's really moved up. Lots of eye candy, lots of neat little things you can do with it.
It'd be a perfect one, you know, because it is a low-end machine for folks to play around with loading.
And that's it. And I also get a lot of people who are telling me, I've got an old machine. I want to use it. I know that I don't want to buy another copy of Windows. Even if I put an illegal copy of Windows on it, it's going to run slow. Well, maybe I should be playing with this Linux thing. Here's CD. It's perfectly legal. Take this and go.
That does have a CD burner in it, or a CD drive in it, correct?
This? No.
No.
Yeah, a lot of netbooks don't have optical drives. They have small hard drives. They have limited RAM.
Right.
So that one, you'd have to load it, what, through a flash drive?
I have done that, and I also have a USB flash CD drive. CD burner, actually.
You could put the file that you're going to use to install Ubuntu on a flash drive and just run it from there, correct?
Yep, you can do that. Any one of the users. Linux Mint is terrific. PC Linux OS is good. There's a, you know, I say Ubuntu because I use Ubuntu mostly, but there's a bunch of good, very good versions of Linux out there. So, you know, it's not expensive to do it. In fact, it's pretty cheap. This thing, everything got recognized instantly. Instantly, it just ran. Everything just ran, without a question, without an issue.
Well, and plus so the other feature that I kind of like versus, you know, going over Windows is you can set up the utility that periodically it'll go out and look for updates for your hardware.
Every day, hardware and that's the thing I like about this. Every single program I run in here, not just the operating system, but every single program, every game, every application, everything is automatically updated in the machine. Every once in a while it comes up and says, new updates, click here, boom, type in your password so that we know it's you. Mm-hmm. Boom, in go the updates. And every single thing, I don't have to say, oh, dang, I forgot that one, or I'm behind on that one, or you know, whatever. It all gets updated.
Which begs the question, why doesn't Windows and Mac do that?
Because all of those programs come from multiple companies. You know, the Mac will update its operating system, and iTunes updates, what, every 4 hours? Whether it needs it or not, I think, is pretty much the way that goes. And they'll update, you know, Windows will update the operating system. There's also updates for Office. But most people using Windows and the Mac have a lot of third-party programs, so they all have to be uploaded individually. Under Linux, all those third-party programs are bundled in with the system or are allowed by the folks at Linux, at whatever the Linux distribution is, to hook into the update mechanism. So in a lot of them, you know, if I install an application, I can install it in such a way so that it will then auto-update along with everything else. So I never have to look for a third-party application.
Thing that is, though, why wouldn't a manufacturer want to be hooked in to do something like that?
And I most mean, of them do.
You know, most of, well, with the Microsoft and Apple, every company has their own update service. So Apple software updates with Apple's updater, Adobe's updates with Adobe's, Microsoft updates. And I can see their point of not wanting competitors to have access to a single update point.
Right, and because everything is free under Linux, there's no competition.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You know, and so it just becomes so much easier.
Yeah,
you
know,
I have friends who are like, I spent 2 hours updating all my stuff this weekend. Really? I punched one button. Okay, whatever works for you.
And so many folks don't get around to updating. You know, I mean, I've gone to...
Well, because it's a pain in the neck.
Mm-hmm. That's why I would think, you know, down the road there'd be some way to simplify it. You know, they're trying to make everything else so much easier for folks to use and do. That why wouldn't this
be
considered?
Well, and the problem is that the filthy lucre gets in the way.
Yeah.
Money gets in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, well. We all pay for it.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I tend to use Ubuntu simply because I'm so familiar with it and I like it, but I really like Linux Mint, So there's a bunch of good stuff out there, and if you've got an older machine, why not try it? I mean, if the machine is just sitting there,
yeah, go. What do you got to lose?
You're playing now. You're having fun. It's not even work. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be slower because the machine is slower and it's older and whatever, whatever. But as long as you've got enough RAM and enough hard disk space for it, go for it.
The thing of it is, though, you say it's going to be slower. You know, it's all relative. I mean,
right?
Because granted, it might, you know, compare it to your latest and greatest machine. But I guarantee you, if you compare the way Windows, say XP, was running on this old box, and you put Ubuntu on it, and compare the relative speed of things running on that box compared to the XP that was on it, it's going to run a lot faster. Granted, it won't run as fast as your newest machine because it is a newer machine. But it's still going to run faster than XP originally did on that particular machine.
Yeah. I've actually got a machine that has 128 mega RAM on it and running an older version of damn small Linux, DSL. It runs great. I mean, it runs great. And I've got another machine with about the same, 256 mega RAM, and it's running... No, the first one's running 64 meg.
Mm-hmm.
And it runs great. I'm running a 256 meg version that's running Puppy Linux. And runs great.
You know what we had to put on a machine this week?
Fast. What?
Lady, we tried to talk her out of it. Tried to talk her out of it three or four times.
She wanted you to reinstall...
Windows 98.
Oh, my God. Well, at least it wasn't ME. I mean, you got to give it that.
I wouldn't.
Right. Right. You've got some pride.
Yes, I have some standard. But no, literally. And then wanted to guarantee that it was going to be safe. And I said, no. I will put 98 on there for you. But if you're going to surf the internet, you're on your own. Because there are no programs that are going to protect it. There are no more updates. Hello, it's 98. It's over 11 years old.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
They dropped support for it a long time ago, and your antivirus programs won't work with it. Most of your spyware programs won't work with it. Nothing.
Right.
So you're surfing.
But all of those old Windows 98-based viruses and spyware are still running around the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And because she said, well, then what can I do? Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, buy XP.
Well, it's not going to run on this old laptop. Right. I mean, this old laptop, we were using, because it was cracked the corner, Dan wound up literally super gluing this one corner piece back on to give it some support. We had to put hot glue inside to build it up, and then we finally put the other piece on side to hold the mounts, because the screws that go in literally have like these little offsets that go in there, and they're normally into the plastic.
Well, the standouts.
Broken. Yeah.
Right.
And we had to literally glue those back in and build the support around that, which we did, and got it back together. But it's an old laptop. It is what it is, and I can't, you know, make milk out of a sow's ear.
That's right.
So that could be a candidate for Linux.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be great with Puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or DSL. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And then the learning curve, and that's what people are afraid of.
Well,
and
that's what
curve.
They're afraid of, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been running XFCE, or Xubuntu, on a laptop at work, and the eye candy is incredible. But, you know, menus are all different, so people look at it and go, I couldn't learn that. Yeah, actually, you could. You're not as stupid as you want to pretend you are. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tony. Where are you calling from?
Greece.
Greece, New York.
How you doing, Nick?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good. I love your show for years.
Thank you. That's what I like to hear.
I've got a question for you. I do have a netbook. It's a Hewlett-Packard.
Yep.
I've had it since Christmas. I just love it. If I tried Linux and that on it, do I have to uninstall XP, or could you just run it off the thumb drive?
There are some versions of Linux that will indeed run off a thumb drive.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, of course, do I know one? I
don't. We talked about one a week or two ago on the air, and I linked it.
Oh, good. So there's one. There's one in the list.
Okay.
But there's you can actually buy a USB pen drive.
Okay.
There's a site called Pen Drive Linux.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one we linked to.
There yeah. you go. That will tell you all the steps on how to do that. If you search Google for run Linux from USB,
mm-hmm.
you come up with all of these sites.
Okay.
And you know what? That's an excellent way to do this for all of you out there listening. If you install Linux to a USB drive, and I think you only need a 1 gig size drive anymore, so it's not like, you know, it's going to break the bank, because they're pretty inexpensive these days. If you get one of those and install it, when you're done, you shut your machine down, pull out that USB drive, and you're right back to Windows again.
Uh-huh.
So what you may have to do is go into the BIOS and tell it, and on every machine it's different, so I can't give you direct instructions on this, but you may have to tell it it's okay to boot from the USB drive.
Oh, okay.
So somewhere in the boot menu, because a lot of places turn that off because it's a security issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I go up to your laptop and plug in my USB drive, I'm suddenly running your laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you turn that back on, you can run your Linux until you're comfortable with it, and then when you want to go back to Windows, shut it down, pop that thing out, restart it, bang, you're right back in Windows, no question, no problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I first got this also, I bought a DVD drive, because, you know, if you have to load things off a DVD, of course you can't,
right,
none in it. It'll do fine like that. In fact, once I accidentally did something, and I had actually wiped the whole system out and start from scratch with the CDs that came with it, and that went well. But
good thing you had those CDs.
Yes, it came with it. I was surprised.
Yeah.
And the only thing I noticed with that, you can't play DVDs off of that DVD drive. It appears it needs some sort of drivers to go along with it.
It's probably the MPEG-2 decoder.
Right, that's what it is, exactly.
Yeah. So typically you would buy a DVD playback program that would come with that MPEG-2 decoder built into it.
Okay.
Right. The other thing is, you're going to find that running it off of USB can be slow. So you want to make sure you're not doing anything else.
And the speed of the processor decoding the MPEG-2 may make the movie slow.
It might also be slow.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you want to be fairly careful of that.
I love the thing between the long life of the battery and the lightweight computer. It's a beautiful machine.
But you have lower expectations for it, right? I mean, you're not going to go running Halo 3 on it and all of that stuff. So, yeah, if you have those lower expectations, you should be fine. All right, Tony, thanks a lot. That music means that we got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show. Sound bites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hello?
Hi, I'm calling about the two-bedroom apartment you advertise. Is it still available?
Sure.
Great.
Unless you're black or Latino or disabled.
Housing discrimination is rarely this obvious, but it's just as real and just as illegal. So if you hear things like,
I can't assign you a handicapped parking space,
that could be housing discrimination. And the only way to stop it is to report it so we can investigate it. Visit hud.gov/fairhousing or call HUD's Housing Discrimination Hotline at 1-800-669-9777. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Jazz 90.1 appreciates your support through membership. But did you know you can support Jazz 90.1 in other ways as well? For example, by donating your old vehicle. When you donate your old vehicle to Jazz 90.1, we receive cash and you get the tax deduction. We even come pick it up. To find out more, call 966-5299. When the time comes to change vehicles, think of Jazz 90.1 and call 966-5299.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's 41 minutes after the hour, and that means it's time for another news item. Woohoo! No one is quite sure why, but Idaho now gets spammed a little more heavily than any other state in the U.S. My own not-so-private Idaho. Looking at the email traffic that's being sent to business users in that particular state, 93.8% of all their email traffic will be spam, said Paul Wood, a senior analyst with Semantics Message Labs Group, which released research on the topic Thursday. That's actually higher than the global spam average. So far this month, the average spam rate globally is 86.4%. Pikers, 99% of the email that comes into RIT is spam. 99%. Might be 98% now.
Too much.
Sweet. Too much. 86.4% meaning that out of every 100 messages, 86 of them would be spam. The average business gets about 60 spam messages per employee per day. Other states that seem to be spam magnets are Kentucky, New Jersey, Alabama, and Illinois. On the other end of the scale, Puerto Rico, Montana, Alaska, both of the computers running up there, Kansas and South Dakota are now the least spam regions in the country. In Puerto Rico, 83.1% of messages are spam. Spammers aren't we don't have any listeners in Alaska yet, do we? So they won't know. Okay, good.
They might be podcasting.
They could be podcasting. Spammers aren't targeting certain states, Wood said, but he noticed that a couple of factors can be made can make getting higher volumes of spam more likely. States with a lot of small businesses tend to get more spam per capita, and workers in some industries, including marketing, recreation, engineering, and real estate, are a lot more likely to be spammed than farm workers or public sector employees. Science and technology happen to be big business in Idaho, but the state may also just be a victim of bad luck. A year ago, it was the 44th most spammed state. Asked to explain the jump to number one, Wood said the honest answer to that is, I don't know what would have changed specifically within Idaho. The Message Lab's data are culled from Symantec's business customers, don't necessarily reflect the experience of home users. With the amount of spam people receive, if the amount of spam people receive really is just a matter of luck, it's starting to be spread around a little more evenly. Last year, there was a 15.1% margin between the least spammed and most spam states. This year, the margin is just 10.7%. So what do you think about the amount of spam you get? And I particularly want to hear from you Idahoans listening on the stream. Idahoans, Idahonians. I don't know. Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or 1-800-790-0415.
One of the things that's been happening in spam in the last few months is that the spammers are going after smaller banks. You know, we've probably all right. seen the Citibank, mm-hmm. you have a problem, or SunTrust, you have a problem. Well, now they're looking at small local banks, you know, in individual cities, and spamming an area with that local bank, because you're much more likely to click on that spam from your own local bank instead of one of these national ones now.
Well, it's also they're doing it tracking numbers. You know, it'll sit there and they're falsifying and saying, well, this is your tracking number from Amazon.com.
Yeah.
You know, they're starting to hit some of those too, getting folks to click on it. And if you've just done, you know, something from Amazon.com, but you look at who it's coming from, it's like, yeah.
Ooh, I better log into my account and make sure that's right. And then you're logging into the fake account. They mm-hmm. steal your package by changing the delivery.
Right. Yep. But and then order 100 million more items with one click.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, though. And they look so you know, genuine.
Well, it's real easy to steal what a website looks like. It's just, yep. it's ludicrously
simple. Watermarks
and
everything else. Yep. And like I've always said, if you have to think about it, don't click on it.
Right. If you're gonna check, if you get worried, go to the site on your own. Don't yes. click on the link. Go to the site on your own and do it.
Do not use any link.
Do you know what the state fish of Idaho is?
The carp.
The cutthroat trout.
I had the first letter. The cutthroat trout?
What in the world is a cutthroat trout?
It's the pirate of trout.
Yeah. The state fruit is the wild huckleberry.
Does it have a patch over its eye?
That's right.
I'm looking now.
I'll almost guarantee you that the average one doesn't. I'm just saying. Why do they call it? Probably has a red mark on its throat.
Or a red mark on it, like it's been cut.
Right.
And
right.
bleeding.
So, yeah, you want to be careful of spam. They're getting better at it. It's no longer, you know, there's still a lot of stuff running around where you think to yourself, well, that's the stupidest email I've ever received. Nobody'd fall for that. And then there are the ones that are so clearly real that you yep. have to step back and think.
And that was a survey that came out a few months ago. You know, something like 60% of the people click on links in spam, even though they know it's spam because they want right. to see what's going to happen, or they're actually interested in the fake products that are being announced.
Right, 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 right. All right, our next caller is Don. Where are you calling from, Don?
I'm calling from Hilton.
Hilton, New York. What do you got to say for yourself?
Well, you were talking about spam. I don't get very much spam.
You're lucky.
When I get it, I forward all of it to spam@uce.com. I mean .gov. And I was told that you, by sending it there, they follow up on the heavy spammers and try and see how legal, how they can shut some of it down.
Right, right. And there is, I don't find anything at UCE.gov.
Huh. It never comes back.
Well, yeah, because, well, yeah, if that's an invalid address, there's nothing to come back from. Here it is.
I was given that a while ago, so I'm wasting my time.
You're right. The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, does manage this address, spam at uce.gov, unsolicited commercial email. They are changing that address. No, the old email address, uce at ftc.gov, is being changed. So spam at uce.gov is the correct address. That actually started in July of 2004. We're catching up to it now. So that, the FTC will investigate large-scale spam to try to track down people, because most of spam is fake products, that they're trying to steal your money with fake products. So the Federal Trade Commission has jurisdiction on that.
Good call, Don. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So those of you who get spam, forward it to spam at uce.gov. UCE for unsolicited commercial email. Unsolicited commercial email, uce.gov. In general, if a URL ends in .gov and actually ends in it, you can be pretty sure it's safe.
Yeah.
That means it's not followed by an at sign or a dot or anything else. It ends in .gov.
Because there's some sneaky ones that will be, you know, ebay.com/stealmyinfo.ru.
Right. Well,
and so you only see the ebay.com and think it's real.
Right. What's interesting is that you can go to an address that's uce.gov@stealinfo.com. And it looks legit because it starts at uce.gov, but that at tells you uce.gov is actually an email address.
Yep.
Oh, you're right, uce.gov.stealmyemail.com, right? And then that says it's just a machine at that other address. So it's got to actually end in .gov or .mil, and then because you can't get, as an individual, you can't get a .gov or a .mil thing. So it has to be... it has to be a legitimate site. You can't just go and get it. It's not doable.
But G0V is a legitimate fake domain.
Right, and you got to be very careful of that. M1L, MI1 often looks like MIL, so you do have to still be very careful.
Where's my link here? Google has a safe browsing diagnostic page where you can put in any URL you want, and it will tell you if that URL has had any malware on it in the last 90 days.
Nice.
Which is really cute. I've put that on our link list, but it's google.com/safebrowsing/diagnostic?site=, and then put in the name of your site. So we were talking earlier about...
There's got to be a fill-in form for that on their site.
Not that I found. We were talking earlier about the New York Times got compromised by a fake ad. A company was buying real ads, pretending to be a real company for 3 or 4 days to not to arouse suspicion, and then they started putting fake ads with malware in it.
Ooh.
And the New York Times front page got hit by it, and that was pretty bad. And so they had to issue it was the fake antivirus message. So the New York Times website put out a big public disclaimer warning people that if you clicked on that ad, you're screwed.
Gonna be, yep. So many of them do, though. I mean,
and that's how a lot of, because the ad market for putting ads on websites is almost completely automated, where websites and ad servers and ad agencies and ad creators, everything, because there's so many ads that it would just take forever for a person to do it, and you'd lose money on it.
Yep.
So now the ad agencies submit to the ad companies, who just inject it into the website with very little human oversight.
All right, I think we need to mention that it's finally time to enter a world where undersea cities bloom, where gene splicing is a reality, where staggering technology and a promising utopia spiral into a hellish nightmare world. It's time to enter Rapture, because in 2 weeks, Feral Interactive will bring BioShock to the Mac.
Only 2 years late.
BioShock is perhaps the most anticipated game to come to the Mac platform this year. When it was first leaked earlier in the year, buzz for the game was immediate, but information has been scarce. The silence was broken in a big way on Thursday when Farrell set October 7th as BioShock's release date. Not only do Mac gamers have a date to circle on the calendar, they also have system requirements for the game. BioShock requires at least a 1.8 gigahertz Intel-based Mac. Intel-based Macs, all you G5 users are kind of out of luck, with 1.5 gigabytes of memory, 128 megabyte graphics card, a DVD drive, and 8 gigabytes of hard drive space. You'll need Mac OS X 10.5.8 or later to run the game. If you've got a Mac with integrated Intel graphics, you're out of luck. However, BioShock does run with the new generation of MacBooks and Mac Minis.
With the NVIDIA integrated graphics.
Right. BioShock puts the play. I was actually talking to an Intel rep the other day about how their graphics chips, while wonderful, are kind of the redheaded stepchild of the graphics industry.
And they're working on their own discrete graphic chip now.
Right.
Because they don't want to have to use ATI graphics chips because that's their competitor, AMD.
Right.
So it's the Intel graphics chips have typically been very slow, but now they're working on faster ones too.
Right. So, yeah, that's coming. It's originally published by 2K Games, and it's going to sell for about $50. And, of course, Steve will have the URL online in a moment. So if you're waiting for BioShock, you're already playing it on PCs, you couldn't care less, give us a call, 966-JAZZ, 966-5299, or 1-800-790-0415.
That is one of the common things people do with their Macs. With the Intel-based Macs, you can run Windows on them, which means you can run the hottest Windows games before they come out in Mac versions. We always joke that the there's a lot more games for Windows, but the best games come to the Mac, so we use Windows to weed out the crap.
Yeah. So they come 2 years later, but they come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you really want to play games anyway, you get an Xbox or a PlayStation.
Yeah, right.
But the casual gaming market is huge on the Mac and on Windows and now on the iPod.
You're right.
Yep.
I have downloaded a couple of games. I downloaded a Boggle-type game. I downloaded a Sudoku game. I downloaded a great game, which I will be reviewing, called Rock Paper Airplane. It's absolutely wonderful, and I hope to get to it this week. And I've been playing it. I just haven't really sat down and formalized a review on it. I'm looking forward to doing that. It's a very cool game. Talking about the podcast, though, I should tell you that last week we had 361 people download as of last. See, the log changes every Sunday morning. So it goes Sunday morning to Saturday. So last week is actually, you know, ending last week. So that was 361 downloads. So far this week, we've got 345 downloads. We have a new player. One person from Moldova downloaded the podcast. I'm not entirely certain where Moldova
is.
Yeah. We'll have to look that up. But if you'd like to call, you clearly speak English, or else why would you be downloading our podcast? Please feel free to call in or let us know what you think. People from Canada, people from Finland, people from Germany, people from the UK.
Is there anybody from Guam?
Nobody. Nobody from Guam, and I want to know why.
Okay, well, no, my one friend, Corey.
It's between Romania and the Ukraine.
There you go.
Get him to start listening to it. Because he was asking about it and that, and I said, you know, how we could get that going.
Right.
Cool.
All right. Well, that noise tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank each and every one of you who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Please call in earlier and more often next week. Thanks to all of you listening on the podcast and listening on the stream and everything else. So we're going to go now, and I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to the longest-running commuter show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.